This is Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour, joined today by my matey, Mara Zussman, to review Wolfwalkers. Directed by Tom Moore and Ross Stewart, Wolfwalkers is a 2020 animated fantasy adventure film set in Kilkenny, Ireland in 1650. It's the third and final installment in their critically acclaimed hand-drawn Irish folklore trilogy, preceded by The Secret of Kells in 2009 and Song of the Sea in 2014. In Wolfwalkers, Robin Goodfellow, voiced by Honor Neefsy, is an English girl of about 10 who comes to the fortified town with her father, Bill Goodfellow, voiced by Sean Bean, who's there to serve as a hunter for Lord Protector Oliver Cromwell, voiced by Simon McBurney, in his campaign to reconquer Ireland. Specifically, Goodfellow is there to hunt wolves, who attack and menace colonizer and colonized alike, where the forest surrounding the city is increasingly cleared for settlement, farming, and timber. Robin is supposed to stay in the city when her father hunts, but she follows him out anyway, accompanied by her pet falcon Merlin. When they encounter the wolves, and Robin misses one with her crossbow, the arrow hits Merlin, who's rescued by a mysterious red-headed girl that takes him back to the forest. Robin is told again by her father, and now the Lord Protector, to go back to the town, but escapes when she creates a diversion and goes looking for Merlin. Back in the forest, she encounters a strange wolf whose friendly attention scares her so much she steps in a trap. The wolf tries to help Robin escape the trap and is successful, but bites her accidentally. She follows the wolf back to its den, where she witnesses it turn into a spirit that merges with the girl she saw before, sleeping in the den. This is Mev, voiced by Ava Whitaker, and she's a wolfwalker. A girl when awake and a wolf when the girl sleeps. She reveals that her sleeping mammy, voiced by Maria Doyle Kennedy, had been planning to leave the forest, but hasn't returned in a long time while away in wolf form. Robin is impressed with the friendliness and magic of the wolfwalker Mev, who heals her bite, and thinks that she can convince her father that the campaign against the wolves can be called off since they're leaving. When she gets back to the city, though, she discovers the Lord Protector plans to burn down the whole forest to exterminate the wolves and is prevented from returning to tell Mev. Well, thanks for joining me, Mara, to review this film.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get into what's going on in this movie, do you want to just say a little bit about why we ended up watching it, what drew us to it?
Sure. I heard that Tom Moore put out another movie, and we really loved watching Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea. And partly I sought out those movies because my daughter has some Irish ancestry, and I felt like it was important for her to have some connection to it and have some, you know, just stories. And yeah, so this film, we were really excited to watch it with our kids. There's so much going on in it, so there was a lot to draw from. Do you want to say why you wanted to talk about it for St. Patrick's Day?
I think it's a welcome change of pace from the way that St. Patrick's Day is observed and celebrated in the United States, a historical colonizer. And in this movie, the Irish are so far removed from the possibility of being the colonizer, of having been folded into whiteness, that there is something different about what it's saying about the history of Irish oppression, because it's been brought up a lot, especially in the age of the internet, how there were Irish slaves. And this is often brought up in a way that is meant to minimize the reality of racial oppression, of white supremacy, of whiteness. And it's hard to watch that movie and make this kind of argument, because the kind of colonial domination that the film is showing us is typical of today's heteropatriarchal, white supremacist, neocolonialist, capitalist world order. And, you know, there's these other themes that aren't specifically Irish that I think are the connection to the land, the question of what is happening to the land as people take it over, convert it to property, clear it out, turn it into what suits them. These are themes that are literally shaping the world and have been for the 400 or 500 years that capitalism has been around. And this film is set basically kind of at the early stages of that process.
Yeah, and I think another reason why we wanted to talk about it was just because I think as white folks who are trying to be anti-racist, and I think a big piece of that journey is, as white anti-racists, we know that it's important to have a connection to our ancestors, because that's something that assimilating into whiteness has taken away from us. you know, just kind of looking back at the history and what was happening during this time in Europe and England and Ireland, around the enclosures and just around the loss of culture and identity, you know, ultimately for the project of capitalism, and then how all of that got exported to the New World. So that, anyway, there's a lot going on in this movie.
So yeah, it's set in 1650, which is in the middle of what was called the Third English Civil War. It's a year after Parliament votes to execute King Charles I for being treasonous and a traitor to the people. And it is the beginning of this period when Oliver Cromwell seizes power with basically a armed party, the New Model Army, and stages a kind of military coup. Oliver Cromwell is this statesman and guy born into the middle gentry in 17th century England, and he is a Puritan, and he comes to Ireland to rid it of Catholics and to civilize it, in his words as they're portrayed in the film. And this was one of the most brutal periods in Irish history. There are works of art today that draw on Cromwell as a figure of fascism, of this super totalitarian religious kind of authoritarian, who was also in some ways a revolutionary. He was bucking the old order of the aristocracy. But in Ireland, he, you know, waged a campaign of genocide against Catholics, but by extension, because of the hegemony of Catholicism in Ireland, it really meant an attack on the Irish people themselves. And that is looked at in this film through the lens of the wolves. The wolves are a wild animal, but they are also symbolic of the wild upstarts that the Irish seem to be to the English colonizers. And they're either taming them, which is one of the promises made by the Lord Protector character in this film, or just eliminating them, is part of a project of civilizing, of making the world better in their eyes.
Right, and it's, you know, the wolf walkers as part wolf, part witch. And so the witch hunts that were prevalent during this time and before and after, kind of, you know, there's like a nod to that as well. And yeah, I mean, Maeve is just such an incredible character. I just, you know, she is wild. She turns into a wolf, and, you know, but she's like so joyful and protective. And really befriends this other little girl, Robin, who is trying to, she's rebellious in her own way. She totally defies what the puritanical order, you know, prescribes for her, which is just to like stay home or to work in a scullery doing household chores. And she wants to hunt, be a hunter like her father, and she wants to be free and wild. And so she just finds this kindred, this kinship with Maeve, and ultimately kind of becomes the thing that she sets out to hunt, like the hunted, the hunter becomes the hunted, which is just a beautifully, you know, beautiful twist in the movie.
This is Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking today with Mara Zusman about the 2020 fantasy adventure animated film Wolfwalkers. So, spoiler alert, we're going to talk a bit about how the film ends, because though this film is based around a lot of history, it takes a lot of liberties, and one of those is that this Lord Protector Oliver Cromwell figure ends up dying in the story in the forest. And that is not how the real Oliver Cromwell died. He died in 1658 after his campaign in Ireland. He died of what's been described as natural causes. And so what do you like about how this film ends, and what is the benefit maybe for it not being the exact history?
I'm no like Irish history expert or anything, but Cromwell definitely, you know, has a bad reputation amongst the Irish, part of a legacy of extreme brutality against the people and the land. And so imagining him perishing in his attempt at destroying the forest and these spiritual beings, the wolf walkers, feels kind of, you know, righteous. And what's interesting is like, So I also wanted to talk about, just kind of from a psychological perspective, a little bit about Robin's father. His name's Bill Goodfellow. He's kind of like a common man. You can see that he has this really secure kind of attachment to Robin. They both love each other. But Robin's become a wolf walker at this point, and he's afraid. And he talks about that. Like, you know, the reason why he continues to insist that Robin stay home and that she has to work, and like work is prayer, you know, is because ultimately we find out that he's afraid of being separated from her, of not being able to protect her. And in this final scene, or one of the final scenes, he gets bit as well. And you see him slowly realize that he's transforming into a wolf walker. And it's actually the way in which he stays attached and connected to Robin and how they stay a family. He has to, like, cross over to the magical side to, like, stay connected to her. And once the Lord Protector gets bit and realizes that he's about to transform as well, he actually takes his life because of his allegiance to his God and the puritanical values that he holds. So I thought that was just kind of an interesting juxtaposition.
And the two families in this kind of classic structure become one in the end. You have a mother and a daughter and a father and a daughter. Robin's mother is not around, and it's not implied that she is still alive. And so when everyone is freed in the end and everyone is, as Robin puts it, part of the same pack, they go off into the sunset, you know, clearly having kind of formed a new family unit. And in that, like, integrating the two peoples and being whole, finding some kind of intactness despite the kind of severed cultures and ways of life that colonization process brought.
Right. It's like there's that hopefulness that they can live another day. And even though they have to flee the forest and, like, the magical oak tree that gets cut down at the end, which was kind of this, like, sad part. What are some other things that you liked about the movie or that you wanted to share?
Well, just kind of to nerd out a bit on the name Robin Goodfellow, that is this kind of puckish figure in English folklore who is mentioned famously in A Midnight Summer's Dream by William Shakespeare, writing about 50 years earlier. And it's also a name that Karl Marx associates with his figure of the old mole, which is interesting because it's like Robin's pagan roots are realizing themselves in light of this puckish person from Ireland who is clearly connected to their earth-based spirituality.
And that reminds me, I really wanted to bring in Sylvia Federici's book, Caliban and the Witch. Federici is a Marxist feminist historian and in this book tragically writes of the enclosures and what happened to the commons. And, you know, this film, and of course the witch hunts, and this film definitely touches on some of that. So the commons was a space that created like a patchwork for just commoners, villagers to subsist on. But it was more than that. It was a gathering space where people like practiced culture, where people came together to celebrate natural cycles, where there was a connection to land in the commons. And so the erasure of the commons, and then again the significance of the witch hunts, which definitely the film, you know, ties in there, to create an underclass of subjugated women who would end up being responsible for the unpaid domestic reproductive labor necessary to create the conditions for wage labor and for industrial capitalism. You know, I think in recent years, there's really been a resurgence of interest in witchcraft, and you see it on Instagram all the time. And so I think that's what people are going to really find really appealing in this film is witchy pagan iconography and the magic in it. And what was inspiring when I read Caliban and the Witch was really understanding how the witches, you know, the reason why they were so threatening to the dominant class at the time were because they were rebelling against the enclosures. And so my hope for folks excited about this movie or just excited about witchcraft in general is finding inspiration from the history, but also realizing that through this like intimate, deep connection to the land and a spiritual connection that creates a motivation to really radically change how we live, you know, like the consumerism and just the like constant growth and everything that's associated with like the destruction of the planet, basically.
Yeah, going back to kind of some of of Bill Goodfellow's psychology, and really the psychology of this totalitarian and maybe other totalitarian societies, is just how he's confronted by Robin later in the film for doing exactly what he's trying to prevent from happening to her. He says that, you know, I hope that one day, you know, you're not in a cage. And she, you know, pushes him off of him and says, what are you talking about? I am in a cage. I'm in a cage because of all of these things that you tell me to do out of fear. And it kind of starts to dawn on him that this is kind of the root of the power over him that he fears.
And so, yeah, getting back to kind of what we talked about earlier, you know, we do feel like it's important to remember that at one point we experienced colonization and genocide and a loss of culture, loss of a connection to the land. And I think that through those stories, those histories, and being able to identify with those ancestors, we as white folks anyway, can truly recognize all that we've lost because of whiteness. And so will, you know, hopefully motivate us to keep fighting for, you know, for the liberation of all people.
I think rather than showing us what we have lost, it shows us this fear that we have lost everything to the social and material connections we have to the land and our more reciprocal and convivial relations with each other. But what's appealing about the film is that I think it's short-circuiting that fear that we have lost our humanity. We are given the opportunity to examine how the fear of loss itself drives the colonial capitalist project as a self-fulfilling prophecy, and how not to let the fear of loss trap us in our complicity with these systems of domination and extraction and genocide. That was ultimately what changed in the Bill Goodfellow character. And ironically, Robin Goodfellow is fearless. Her father has to tell her what to be afraid of. And she's much more in touch with her humanity, which is the source of her fearlessness. And it's also what makes her so receptive to the seemingly animal otherness of Meth's character and the earth-based spiritual connection.
And before we wrap up this conversation, after all, this is a children's movie. Just to get another perspective, my daughter has agreed to say a few things about her impressions.
So, Raisa, you're 10 years old, about the same age as Robin and Maeve, the two main characters in the movie. Tell us, what did you think about Wolfwalkers?
Honestly, overall, I think it was a very good movie. It was sort of dramatic, but not in, like, a really bad way.
Yeah, did you have, like, a favorite part?
I think it's probably when they did that scene where they played the song Running with the Wolves. That was just a really fun scene where Robin had just discovered that she was a wolf walker. And I definitely enjoyed, like, after the movie, just watching that scene over and over again.
And Raisa, do you have a favorite character?
Probably Maeve. I really like how she, like, approached Robin becoming a wolf walker. And I think she's just, like, a very good character.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us in this discussion.
So we have our other child, Moses, on to share a few thoughts they had about Wolfwalkers. Moses, what did you think about Wolfwalkers?
I like when all the person turn into wolves.
Thanks, Moses. I've been talking with my matey Mara Zussman and our children Raisa and Moses, talking about the 2020 fantasy animated Irish folklore film Wolfwalkers. It's available through Apple TV, which you can get a free trial subscription to just to watch this movie. Keep an eye out. I'm sure that it'll show up at the library once we are ordering materials again. For the Old Mole Variety Hour, this is Joe Clement.